The civil rights leader was shot while standing on a motel balcony in Memphis. He had gone to that city to protest the working conditions and low wages of the mostly black city sanitation workers. Touré Reed is co-chair of African American Studies at Illinois State University. He tells GLT's Judy Valente King was shifting his focus to economic justice at the time of his death, and that high unemployment and poverty rates among American blacks today show how much of King's dream remains unrealized.
The March on Washington in 1963 was actually motivated by the ubiquitous disparities in income and unemployment. And its aims included a number of things that we don't generally think of as civil rights aims. They included a full employment economy, jobs programs, by which I mean public works programs specifically, which would mean that the government would create jobs directly for unemployed or underemployed workers, an increase to the federal minimum wage, etc. King obviously signed off, he endorsed that agenda, but as the organizers of the March on Washington of 1963 had stated at the time, anti-discrimination legislation alone would fail to close the gap between blacks and whites, because what was at play, and at this point had been at play for about a decade, was the transformation of the American economy. So, with automation, eliminating high-paying unionized jobs that didn't require a lot of formal education, simply passing anti-discrimination legislation would do little to redress the sources of economic inequality that impacted the black masses.
You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Judy Valente. I'm with Dr. Touré Reed, who is co-director of African American Studies here at ISU. We're talking about Dr. King's legacy. Dr. King had always been advocating nonviolent resistance, and it just seemed that with his death, that whole idea of fighting for social change with nonviolent tactics just went by the wayside. What are your thoughts on that?
I think prior to his death, many young people in particular were disillusioned with nonviolent protest. Nonviolent protest is a tactic that worked in the context in which the U.S. could be shamed. The slow pace from the vantage point of African Americans of progress, of material progress, contributed substantially to a loss of confidence, a loss in confidence, or loss of confidence in the capacity of nonviolent protest to deliver. What's more consequential than the disillusionment that people had with nonviolent protest is the rise of the Black Power movement. And the Black Power movement, there are many positive things that one can say about it, insofar as racial pride for Black Americans was something that understandably many Black Americans took to in a nation that denigrated African Americans, right? But the negative aspects of the Black Power movement come down to legitimating tribalism, right? Legitimating a kind of separatist politics that King and others understood made coalition building really quite difficult. And in a context in which Black Americans were a minority in a democratic society, they needed coalitions, right? Black Americans needed to ally with other people that didn't quote unquote look like them, who shared many of the concerns that they did. And Black Power, I think, had a kind of chilling effect on the civil rights movement's capacity to deliver.
Where are we, would you say, today in terms of civil rights? Would Dr. King be pleased? After all, women, gays, transgender people have all won great strides, but there remains a long way to go. And we seem to be retreating into tribes, us against them mentality.
I suspect King would look on a landscape that he understood to be a mixed bag. In the aftermath of the civil rights movement, we have an explosion in the number of black elected officials. One might argue ultimately culminating in the election of the nation's first president who happened to be black. So I think you've got that. You have the genesis as well, and in the era following the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Of a real black middle class, right? I mean, prior to the 1960s, maybe even prior to, certainly prior to World War II, what constituted the black middle class was more cultural than economic. By the end of the 20th century, there is truly a black middle class in America, which King would certainly have taken some credit for and been encouraged by. At the same time, the disparities persist. Blacks continue to be overrepresented among the nation's poor and unemployed. They're overrepresented among the inmate population, etc. And so I suspect that King would think that there is much work to be done, which he was aware of by, 1968, right? King had shifted focus from the traditional civil rights issues, the issues centered on enforcement of the 14th and 15th Amendments, in favor of economic justice. And I think, if nothing else, the lingering disparities highlight the prescience of people like A. Philip Randolph, Bayard Rustin in the early 1960s, and King by the late 1960s, in understanding that simply eliminating the racial barriers, the formal racial barriers to equality, would be inadequate. We needed a more economically fair society.
Torrey Reed is with the History Department of Illinois State University. He's the co-director of the African American Studies Program. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about Dr. King's legacy.
Thank you for having me, Judy.
I'm Judy Valente.
A recent study by the Public Religion Institute found 3/4 of American whites say they have no close friends who are black. The vast majority of African Americans say they have no close friends who are white. The study concluded Americans support racial integration in the abstract, but have a harder time practicing it in their private lives.